Good morning. Thank you, Jamie, for your introduction and for reading the passage of Matthew chapter 7 for me. And as you mentioned, we're looking at the question of, do people pick grapes from thorn bushes? Didn't go unnoticed that this is the second time we've been asked to speak at West Glasgow, and again, it's about fruit, and I don't know if that was intentional or not. But certainly today's talk is about grapes, and I'm quite certainly partial, certainly to the fermented version, either in red or white, so that was fine. So the background to Matthew chapter 7, as Jamie mentioned, is within the context of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which spans from chapters 5 through to 7. And we've been looking at several questions over the last few weeks. And Linda, a couple of weeks ago, highlighted about our saltiness and the importance of how we live our lives in the world and bringing God's character and nature into our relationships and actions. And last week, Dick challenged us to think about what our priorities in our life were and what kind of relationship do we want with God. So in today's passages and the surrounding verses, Jesus addresses those who seek to live faithfully for God and delving into the essence really of what discipleship is. And he explores three qualities of being a follower of Jesus. And these are quite big themes. So from the passage, I thought there were three things. One is about spiritual discernment. One is about prioritizing authenticity over appearance. And the last, accountability. And you could do a series of talks on each of these topics, to be honest. So I'm going to touch on each of them. I have also included some other reading material or podcast material if you want to go to that, because I realize they are quite big themes and I can only touch on them today. So as I prepared for the talk and over the verses, I was really struck by the amount of imagery and pictures that Jesus is using in these verses. And if you look at verse 13, the image is of the width of gates and whether that's narrow gates or wide gates. And verse 15, it's about sheep and wolves' clothing. And then verse 16, it's grapes with thorn bushes. Verse 19, it's trees being chopped down and thrown into fires. And lastly, verse 14, it moves on to talk about foundations of houses, whether they're built on rock or sand. So, and I'm sure you can think of other examples of when Jesus is teaching where he uses other images. And certainly, if you think about the context, Jesus didn't have the luxury of PowerPoint slides that we have or Google Images to enhance his message or to record the speeches for future viewing. So instead, he did communicate solely with the use of with speaking. So his use of imagery served kind of multiple purposes. And firstly, it created a kind of visual impact for people, ensuring that the message would be memorable. Secondly, the images were carefully selected cultural relevant symbols such as gates and sheep and grapes that his audience would understand. And lastly, I think the choice of imagery also aimed to evoke kind of an emotional response in his audience. So for example, a shepherd who had encountered a pack of wolves, the metaphor of a wolf in sheep's clothing would really resonate deeply with that person. So let me to consider, if Jesus was delivering this message today, What modern-day imagery might he use or employ? After all, our emotional resonance with sheep or gates or chopped-down trees might not be as strong for us today. Instead, what symbols are prevalent in our culture that might provoke kind of those sort of depths of emotional understanding or emotional feeling, understanding feeling? So the first image I'd like us to consider is that of the wolf in sheep's clothing. And in our modern digital age, the image I want you to consider is that of an online scam and deceptive online websites. Many of us have encountered fraudulent emails or messages presenting it to be from legitimate sources like our bank or delivery services. And they may seem genuine at first glance, but lurking behind the intention is to seek to deceive and manipulate, often leading to the compromise of our sort of personal information or financial security. And as we consider the image, you know, I mean, think about online scams, you know, the questions come to mind about, you know, how do we know if the online message is true or not true? How do I know if I can trust the source? What could I do if it is a scam or if I've been scammed? And then how do these things make me feel? So Matthew chapter 7, Jesus is telling his audience not to believe everything that they hear or see regarding religious teaching. And at the time, there was lots of false teaching and false practices about leading people astray. And the focus here was to be more than just discerning or wise, but to be spiritually discerning. It did make me think, what's the difference between discernment and spiritual discernment? The discernment really is a crucial life skill for us all, and is the capacity to accurately judge and perceive situations. Not merely a passive thing, but an active process that integrates our intellect, our intuition, and wisdom to make informed decisions, to be able to differentiate between right and wrong and discern truth from falsehood in our lives. And we all need discernment as we make decisions in life. But what is spiritual discernment? So in preparing for the talk, I kind of asked some trusted friends about spiritual discernment, and they sort of mentioned an author called Ruth Haley Barton, and I've highlighted a couple of books here from her, sort of Sacred Rhythms and Preparing God's Will Together, and also she does a kind of a series of podcasts for which the QR code is there for if you want to look at that later. And the key points from her teaching on spiritual discernment were these. So spiritual discernment involves the ability to perceive, understand, and evaluate spiritual truths, influences, and experiences. Secondly, it's tied in one's relationship to God and involves prayer and meditation and reliance on spiritual guidance or revelation to discern God's will. And it's cultivated through spiritual practices such as studying the Bible, participating in worship and fellowship, and seeking guidance from spiritual mentors or leaders, and engaging in contemplative practices. I guess what I learned was that this spiritual discernment is actually something that takes time. It's a skill that has to be learned through practice, through prayer, Bible study, and central to it is involving speaking to trusted Christian friends. The first question for you to consider then for yourselves is, how am I practicing spiritual discernment in my life? How do I approach important decisions and consider God's will for my life? And how does a group of God's people make decisions about the church and its fellowship? So maybe just take a moment with that. Maybe we'll move on to the second image, which I think is highlighted in the passage, and that's for us to consider in verse 16, which says, you can detect them from the way they act, just as you identify a tree by its fruit, you don't pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles. So Jesus is challenging us to prioritize authenticity over appearance, and he warns against those who outwardly profess faith but fail to live it out in their lives. So again, I was thinking about modern day images of this as what we would symbolize this teaching. And I thought about product review or customer rating systems. And there's an image here. And you'll all have seen kind of and looked at reviews and ratings. And in today's sort of digital age where consumers rely heavily on online reviews and ratings to guide to purchase decisions, the idea of evaluating something purely on its fruit might resonate with us. So consider a hotel or a restaurant with appealing visuals on its website. However, the real measure of the quality lies in the experience of those who have visited it. what were their actual encounters like? And this is precisely the function of online reviews. And similarly, Jesus is prompting us to assess the authenticity and impact of a person's teaching or character by observing the kind of the tangible outcomes of fruit that that person may yield. Much like customers evaluate a product review on reviews and ratings. In our society, there's a prevalent kind of obsession with appearance and surface level impressions, and social media perpetrates this kind of superficiality with kind of over prioritizing image over substance. And unfortunately, this emphasis on outward appearance often comes at the expense of kind of nurturing one's inner self. I was kind of horrified at kind of an example of this recently, and I'm anxious about mentioning it, because as soon as you mention something, I know somebody's going to look at it. But my children introduced me to kind of Channel 4's program Naked Attraction, which starkly embodies this trend where contestants select partners solely based on their physical appearance, devoid of any knowledge of their character, values, or nature. And this underscores that kind of contemporary perceptions of relationships and human connection. I had thought about bringing a sort of short video of this program, but I thought maybe best to avoid it. So in a spiritual context, what does authenticity over appearance look like? So doing things the Christian way, being seen to do Christian things. What the passages challenge us to do is to be putting on a show for others, but aligning our lives with our beliefs and values at all times, and not just when people are watching. So Jesus is concerned about our character and nature of as a person, what we would call the soul or the inner heart, which Jamie touched on. And being a disciple of Jesus involves the transforming of that kind of inner heart, that inner person. A kind of a prominent Christian writer on this topic is Dallas Willard, and I have mentioned him before. And again, in a couple of books highlighted by him, Renovation of the Heart and in The Divine Conspiracy. And also, again, there's a QR code related to a podcast where his teaching is highlighted. But to summarize his teaching on the kind of inner heart, Dallard says these three things, and there's some quotes from the things that Dallas has to say. So he says, the most important thing in your life is not what you do, it's who you become. He emphasizes the significance of inner transformation over external actions, highlighting the importance of character development and spiritual growth. Another aspect of his teaching is grace is not opposed to effort. It is opposed to earning. Earning is an attitude. Effort is an action. Willard emphasizes the role of effort and intentional practice in the process of spiritual formation, while also emphasizing that our transformation is ultimately enabled by God's grace, not by our own efforts to earn salvation. And lastly, he goes on to talk about in spiritual formation for the Christian, basically refers to the sort of spirit-driven process of forming the inner world of the human self in such a way that it becomes like the inner being of Christ himself. He writes that the goal of spiritual formation is being increasingly conformed to the likeness of Christ, with the inner transformation of our thoughts, attitudes, desires, mirroring those of Jesus. So if we go back to our image of the online review, what does this mean for us? And here are some questions for us to consider. Are you living authentically? How important to you is it the transformation of your inner self? What steps could I consider for my life to be more concerned about authenticity over appearance? perhaps more challenging, what might a review say about the way you live your life? Take just a moment to think about those. So the third image I thought we would look at was in verse 19, which is, every tree that does not produce good fruit is chopped down and thrown into the fire. So I guess a modern-day image that might convey the same idea would be perhaps the concept of a kind of quality control process in manufacturing or in production. In industries such as sort of technology, manufacturing, agriculture, there's a rigorous quality control process to ensure that all products meet certain standards and are released to the market, and defective or subpar products are often discarded or recycled to prevent them from reaching customers and damaging their reputation. So similarly, in the context of Jesus' teaching, the images of trees being cut down and thrown into fire represents the consequence of fruitfulness or lack of genuine faith. Just as a product failing to meet the quality standards is discarded, those who fail to produce good fruit in their lives are at the consequence of judgment. And this is the third point about accountability. When I was thinking personally about accountability, it reminded me of the time that I was involved with the Navigators Christian group when I was a student at Glasgow University. The Navigators, as many may know, was kind of formed in 1933 by Dawson Trotman, and the organisation focuses on discipleship, evangelism and training, and its ministry has spread internationally. And Trotman believed in the power of one-to-one discipleship relationships where individuals could hold each other accountable in their Christian walk. And he encouraged believers to find mentors and spiritual partners who could provide support and guidance and accountability in their pursuit of spiritual growth. The Navigators' discipleship strategy, accountability, was often practiced through sort of regular meetings between sort of disciples and their mentors. And these meetings provided opportunities for accountability and to share their struggles, pray together, and encourage one another in their faith. And certainly from a personal point of view, I find my time in Navigators at university very transformative and helped me move my faith from perhaps more kind of church attendance and a sort of learned experience to something that had real meaning in my life and to review how I related to others and encourage me to be more concerned about others' spiritual well-being. In Matthew chapter 7, Jesus also reminds his listeners that not only should we consider how to be accountable to each other, but ultimately we are accountable to God himself. And I've put the passage from Message translation here. Where it says, knowing the correct password, saying master, master, for instance, isn't going to get you anywhere with me. What is required is serious obedience, knowing what my Father wills. I can see it now at the final judgment, thousands strutting up to me and saying, master, we preached the message, we banished the demons, our super spiritual projects had everybody talking. And do you know what I'm going to say to you? You missed the boat. All you did was use me to make yourself important. You don't impress me one bit. You're out of here. So when we think about accountability then, I've got just some last questions for you to consider. I guess how important is accountability in your life? Who do you make yourself accountable to? And how do you help others in being accountable? Again, maybe just take a moment to think about that. That's all I was going to say about the passage this morning, and I hope these kind of up-to-date images have been helpful about the passage and maybe help you to see it in a slightly different way and something to take away and consider over the coming kind of days and weeks. I thought just to finish, we could finish with a prayer that Ruth Haley Barton uses at the end of our podcasts, and it's an old prayer called the Susepe prayer, which in Latin means to receive, and is attributed to St. Ignatius. And this prayer is an expression of surrender and openness to God's will, which aligns well with the process of discernment. So perhaps we can kind of all read this together. Take, Lord, and receive all my liberty, my memory, my understanding, and my entire will. All I have and call my own, you have given all to me. To you, Lord, I return it. Everything is yours. Do with it what you will. Give me only your love and your grace. That is enough for me. Amen.